Greetings, Gameslavers. I have a little bonus podcast for you. The one panel I was able to attend at Denver Comic Con, they did also allow me to record. So here is that recording. It is basically a webcomic artist talking about how to use social media in order to expand their following. Enjoy!
Okay. All right, then I'm going to go ahead and start us off. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you also to the people that attended yesterday. We really appreciated the turnout, and there was a lot of great responses to that. If anybody did not manage to make it, we have the pamphlets from that available for you free up here at the front. Today's going to be a little bit different. Yesterday was much more, we had the slideshow, we kind of walked you through a lot of different topics. Today is more, so you have a webcomic, now what? We're all in this stage ourselves right now, trying to figure out, how do you make it work? What is best for us? So I'm going to throw out some questions. We're going to have different people answer them with their own opinions. And guys, if you have one, just shoot your hand up or stomp all over each other. That's also cool. You know, you do that anyway.
We thought we might do chicken fights, so anyone get on my shoulders and we'll be Master Blaster.
How about idea? Yeah. But we'll keep looking. This is going to cover more about social media, community building, merchandising, those kinds of questions. Because those are the kind of things that are kind of forefront on our minds right now. So, to start us off, social media. What is the best social media option?
MySpace.
What was that?
MySpace.
That's what I'm going to have to disagree with you on, but...
Well, you know, until recently, I'd probably say Facebook because it's the one that everyone uses, and you know, everyone has an account. It's easy to reach people. Certainly, in our case, we have about twice as many Facebook fans as we do on Google Plus, and Twitter. We have a lot more than on Twitter. But this new development that's come up lately is that Facebook has changed how they the algorithm they use to determine who gets to see your posts, and so generally. The only people who are going to see them are going to be people who have commented or liked or you know, somehow interacted with your page recently. So really, you're going to have this core base of fans, and in our case, we get 20-some percent on average who see a post. Everyone else doesn't see it in their feed. They're only going to see it if they go visit your page. And then, conveniently though, Facebook has now provided a way for you to pay them to promote your posts so that more people can see them. So for the low price of $15 per post, you can ensure that all of your fans see your post.
Per post?
Yeah. Well, it's a sliding scale. You can pay them however much you want, but the more you pay them, the higher percentage of your fans will see it. So for $15, which everyone wants to see it.
Or for $15, they can go on a Project Wonderful.
Exactly. Right.
More exposure that's more targeted.
So yeah, I'm actually a little bit disappointed with where Facebook is going, and I think it's going to become less useful for us.
I hope it does soon.
Yes.
I've heard that there's a lot of advantages to Facebook because of the demographic information you can get.
Sure.
Personally, though, I'm a big Twitter fan. I've managed to meet a lot of cool people, some of them which are sitting in the audience, who've been amazing support people through Twitter because it's very, very easy to make a very quick contact with someone. But I can't even figure Facebook out, so maybe it's just that my personality type is better suited to it.
That's key. I think no matter what social media you use, it's got to be the one that fits your personality. Engagement is the key. Because if you're using Facebook and you're interacting on your fans' site, on your fans' Facebook page, or if you're using Twitter and you're actually engaging in those conversations, I've experimented with a lot of different ones. I've kind of really fallen off of Twitter. I don't have the personality type for that. But
not as special as me.
I just don't think I don't think I have that much clever to say. I need to think about it for a while.
Yeah, 140
characters or less.
I'm a little verbose, in case you can't tell. But actually where we have gotten a lot of traffic, what I thought was interesting, is from commenting on other comics pages. And so, because that's where I spend all my time instead of writing Twitter posts, I'm like, I love your comic because I'm such a big fanboy. And then people, other people
so
see
you're doing
that
it
and
genuinely,
there's that engagement and it has, and you can't do it fake. It has to be.
Yeah, you can't do it fake.
You don't even forget social media. You don't even really need it necessarily.
No, I think you need it. I think that you need to have a vehicle for engagement and whatever that vehicle may be. You be consistent with it and be genuine, but also reply and you know, have those conversations, have that interaction. It's not a dialogue. It's not a monologue. It's a dialogue.
Yeah.
What about things like the comic lists and Reddit and things that aren't as interactive?
Are you talking more like StumbleCon, Reddit?
Yeah, any of those things that aren't really engaging people.
Well, I mean, you can put a bit with Reddit. You started up a, was it you or Sean started up a long-form webcomics tag, essentially?
The subreddit is called, like a subject within Reddit. Because before, there was a webcomics and a comic books and a comics subreddit, but long-form comics, at least in my experience, didn't get a lot of traction there. So I started the long-form webcomics subreddit, and we're still just picking up some traction and getting readers, you know, getting subscribers to it. But certainly, I think we get more hits and more upvotes, they're called, than Reddit, when we post in the long-form subreddit than we do if we post in webcomics. Because the webcomics is really more for you know, gag strips. That's what people are looking for there.
Doesn't anybody know what Reddit is?
What's that?
Just asking,
yeah, Reddit? There's a couple notes.
Yeah, so yeah. Reddit is kind of like, would you say a bulletin board or a, like a...
It's really just a place where people can share links. But then the thing is, once you've shared a link, then people can upvote it or downvote it. And they had this algorithm based on how old the link is and how many upvotes and downvotes it's gotten, and it gets ranked. And so the higher your rank is, the more likely people are to see it because it's on the front page. You know, and you can always drill back down into previous pages to see the lower ranked links. And then the thing is, people can also comment on the links as well, and they get discussions going. But more or less, it's just a way of sharing links, and then because of they've got the subreddits, which are sort of categorized, it's like if you were interested in comics, webcomics, whatever, you can go to the webcomics, you know, subreddit, and that's all stuff about some, you know, webcomics.
Yeah. So it's all broken down by category.
Yeah, and there are thousands of them, and the thing is, what I found out when I made this one is that it's super easy to make. All you really have to do is just fill out this little form, put in the name that you want, a little description of what it's about, and then there it is. So I made it, and I started telling people it was there, and now we've got a lot of long-form comic creators using it. I think, though, that, you know, the discussion of whether you should use Facebook or Reddit or whatever, they're all free. And I think it's hard to ignore a free resource like that. So I don't spend a lot of time on Reddit. You know, I post every time we have a new page, I put a post there for that new page. And I'll make a little comment, just kind of introduce what our comic is. And that's mostly all I do. That takes me a couple minutes. So once a week, like my Mondays are busy, where I go out and I you know, seed our links all over the place. But it doesn't necessarily have to take a lot of time.
I think that's a big key. Is I've seen a lot of people just sort of implode under the weight of social media.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to do one, but then you start adding, you know, oh, okay, I'll add Twitter, I'll add Facebook, I'll add Google Plus, I'll add Reddit, I'll add, and people start to spend more time using social media than they are actually spending time on what they care about, which is the webcomic. So I think it's important to maybe have one. Choose one that you can have that direct engagement with. Have a presence elsewhere. But that one should be your home base. And if it starts to become overwhelming, trim it down. Because then you've lost the value of it in the first place.
And there's sites that provide ways of multi-posting to all your places. So, like, there's a Hootsuite where you can post to, say, Twitter and Tumblr and Facebook the same thing. If you have an updated page, you can do that initial post of, hey, there's a new page, and you can catch all those guys instead of logging into each one on update day.
That actually annoys me when people do that.
Oh, the spamming. If you have them more than once, it's like...
Yeah, because no. I've shared certain things on Twitter, shared something, and so when I see the same exact post come through several different mediums, it loses the personal interaction, which is, I think, that's where the value of social media is in that kind of that a conversation which almost seems one-on-one. And so, I'm just getting their post that they've thrown out to everybody, it kind of seems a little impersonal.
Well, personally, I would agree with you, but I've also had readers contact me and say, the only reason I remember to check is because I know that I'm going to be able to see a little blurb on Twitter, a little blurb on DA, and a little blurb on Tumblr. Because that way, if they don't click that link right then, they know that there's a couple other points that will remind them to look. So, yeah, personally, I'm with you. But just because I think it doesn't necessarily mean that that's thought of by other people.
The worst I've heard with those is, like, people who spam it every day of the week for one update, say. Like, remember there's an update.
Or the morning update and the afternoon update.
And they're spamming it. You need your initial day update, and then maybe you can have a reminder later in the week if you're once a week, but otherwise.
See, I do, like, for my web updates, two or three times for an update. Mm-hmm. But with Twitter, it goes by so fast. So I think it's also in part, what kind of content are they expecting to receive? What are they there for? And is it something that's going to be in their way or not? But all of this kind of, we're kind of covering a little bit about how do you get people to notice you on social media, but how do you get them to stay becomes an even bigger question. It's great to have a big boost in people showing up, but if they all leave the next day and you never see them again, doesn't do you a whole lot of good. So community kind of becomes the element that holds your webcomic group together and readership together. So what is key for building a community?
They like to get to know the artist.
Interaction, yeah.
You're selling your comic and you're selling yourself. They want to get to know you. You have to be on some form, some social media network that you enjoy using so that you won't be stickler about, oh, I gotta get on here and talk to people so I can promote myself. And no, it's gotta be one social media that you enjoy and you like checking in and there's people on there that like you and, you know, word will spread with you interacting with people. And
so what about on the site itself? Do you do any community building there?
Yes, I'll actually reply to comments on my webcomic site, you know, and kind of, what do you guys think are going to happen? Why do you think that? You know, and have a whole forum post under each page of a discussion of where the story is going. And that's very vital at the core right there. And some people have forum setups mm-hmm. where the fans can go off and they can discuss. If you have that big a fan base, mm-hmm. they can go and do their own thing in the forums. And
anybody else key to building a community?
Actually, I don't know that I have anything to add because I don't think that we do a great job of it, frankly.
But what would you improve?
I don't know. I'm waiting to hear what you guys say.
Oh, well.
Just curious, how many of us here have had people come up to our tables here during con who are already aware of our comic and are, you know, they were part of your existing community? What about you guys? You have raised your hand? Kevin, how about you?
I've had people familiar with the comic that haven't commented.
Because, I mean, interestingly, we have had no one who's come up and said, oh, I'm aware of you guys. And we have a decent readership, so it's not like I think that no one knows who we are.
I heard of you.
Yeah, I know
you. I know you.
Wait, what are you doing
again? Same here.
But I think that from what I've seen, it seems like you and Angie definitely, I think, do a better job of fostering your community than we do. And I don't know exactly what I'm doing wrong.
Well, for me, on my previous project, I didn't interact with anybody.
Yeah.
I was like a robot. You came for the content, and that was all I produced, because I didn't think anybody was interested in me. And since then, I've kind of realized that that's part of why people read webcomics, is to make that personal connection. They can go to a comic book shop if they want to buy a product that they're never going to know the creators for. But to be able to have that, see the growth of an individual, learn about what they're excited about or interested about, for me, it's all about trying to become human to people. And that was really tough to do at first because it means being a little bit more open with, this is what I'm excited about, or this is what I was thinking about, or here's my process, and then really trying to engage them. When I first started out trying to engage my audience more, the things I did is, one, I completely overhauled my website design. Because someone pointed out to me that I had made it almost impossible to interact. I didn't need to, but the signals that I was sending with my web design basically said, I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to see you, go away. I had colors that were gloomy. Like, if you designed, the way that I recommend color choices now is that, would you paint a room in your house with the colors you would paint your website with? Because I had chosen navy blue, dark green and black. So imagine for a minute walking into a room like that and how long you would want to stay there. My guess is about 2 seconds at most. So I totally overhauled my site. I made it very clear and easy how to comment. You don't have to click, here's the comments, I want to read them, I want to find the click another thing to reply. It's scroll, type, hit a button. To all that unconsciously say, I'm interested in what you have to say and engaging with. So that was the first step, and the second step was clumsily trying to figure out a how or what question to put at the end that was personal to them. Not, this is what I'm doing, isn't that great, but more, well, this is what I experienced, how have you seen this in your life? What stories are you working on? And that's when people, or at least on my site, have started to engage and talk about what they're excited about, and I get to learn about them. which is really cool because I have little careers. So, but that's what I'm mattering on about. Yeah.
I wonder if you two could like elaborate on stuff to share without like developing stalkers or saying things that are
developing stalkers.
Like it's
you can't
kind of
board those people up. They're just crazy.
Yeah,
but that's not your fault.
I haven't had legit flamers or stalkers.
You know, like what to share, what to kind of.
It's a tricky balance.
Yeah.
Like, you don't ever want to get too personal, because sometimes people go like, whoa, too much information, I came here for an escape, not to hear your life story. So getting too personal or too depressing, if you're having a really, really terrible day or you're freaking out about something, yes, keep it to yourself. But it's okay to be like, hey, you know, here, I'm super excited about Denver Comic Con, I'm also kind of nervous. That's okay. You're human. That's great. But saying something like, hey, this reminded me of when I was 12 years old and my house burned down. That was too much information. So I edited that one out because I realized that the comments went from very interactive to dead. It's just too much for people. So you develop kind of an instinct for it. Start slow. And try to stay on the positive side of things. And try to find a silver lining if something is bad. Or if you're good at comedy, take a terrible thing that happened to you and make it hilarious. Because there are people that I'd hear about all the terrible things in their life, but it was awesome to read because I'd just be cracking up the whole way through.
That's what our whole comic is based on.
Yeah, the terrible things in life and then making you laugh about it. Because that's a fun way to do things too. So
it's interesting. We had that conversation at the beginning, knowing that part of the engagement of the community is with the artists. One of the things we had to overcome is that we're not very likable people. So we created characters as the creators were characters, and so that they weren't necessarily us. There was almost this separation so that, oh, they want to engage with us. Well, they're engaging with the Liam character, or they're engaging with the Scooter character. And that way it also kept separate. Plus, when we had started this, we were both in situations where we weren't sure how our employers or prospective employers or people in our life would actually take it. So we wanted to have a bit of a separation. And so by doing that, we were able to really be a lot freer in putting those stuff out there, because it's like, oh, it's not really me. But over time, it's been a lot more, okay, now I feel more comfortable interacting with this fan base. And so I let out a little
bit
more.
It's like training.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Pancakes guys do that, too. They're Gabe and Tycho, but that's not their real names. And for the first, like, year and a half, they didn't realize they were making avatars of themselves. They didn't do it intentionally. It just sort of happened. People went, oh, this is you two. And I'm like, no, it's not. These are characters.
Well, this is even meta, because the characters really aren't us. But, you know, so we had the characters in the comic, then we had the characters that were the creators. And so it really got confusing and schizophrenic.
I think it's also worth mentioning, and I think Dave Kellett said this, but don't quote me on that one, the idea that what you project out is the kind of readership you will get back. So a good example of this is Something Positive's creator tends to be a little bit caustic. He's very critical. He's very snarky and sarcastic. That's kind of his
He stabbed me in an alley once.
Yeah, exactly. He always comes back from conventions and complains that all of his readers are caustic, sarcastic, sharp. Like, you get a lot of what you project out. When I wasn't projecting anything, I didn't get back anything. When I started, like, putting myself out there in a positive way, I get a lot of positive back. I've never, ever gotten a flamer. Maybe I haven't made it yet, but I don't believe that's necessarily the case. I think it's more, what are you putting out?
I'm kind of looking forward to a flamer, though.
Yeah, everybody's like, that's when I made it big.
Yeah.
There's a question in the back.
Do you guys have any recommendations for, so you talk about comments and coming back here with the people watching, that's important. I know it's kind of a, it can be kind of a part that you get, if you have comments on your site, you can manage it, okay, I'm making spam, and I can always sort through those. Do you guys have any good resources for what's a good way to manage that and not have it be a headache?
Well, what's your platform? Are you using WordPress?
I'm using Drupal, so...
Don't ask me.
Yeah, okay, the first thing I would do is switch to WordPress.
Is there a why?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I don't know anything about Drupal. I don't have anything against Drupal. I just know that WordPress has... There are so many plugins and stuff available for free. that make that kind of thing really simple. We use WordPress, and we use the CommonPress theme for it. I know Kevin's using Webcomic theme. Either of those is fine. But the nice thing WordPress has is built-in comment system. And then when it comes to spam, there's also this plugin called Akismet, which does an awesome job of filtering spam.
I think WordPress automatically gives that to you, too.
No, it might be.
It's in the standard install.
And then also, so that's just using the built-in features of WordPress. Now, also, we've switched over to using Disqus, D-I-S-Q-U-S, which is basically just, in other words, it's a free service. You go and you sign up with them, and then you have to add a plugin to your WordPress to integrate it. But it's really pretty simple, and it has its own spam filtering functionality. So really, if you get the right tools in place, we haven't had to spend a lot of time managing our comments. At least like when it comes to spam, that's taken up practically none of our time. We've had just a couple of cases where someone will be commenting and we'll sort of have to maybe... I think I can only think of one case where we deleted someone's comments, and that was just because he was kind of being racist and or anti-Semitic, and he sort of veered into that area, and I told him, you know, to calm down, and then his follow-up to that was even worse than the first. So I just deleted his comments and banned him, and, you know, that was it. So I think depending on your comic and what kind of audience you get, you might not have to worry about a lot of negative comments at all.
You know, Sam, again, with WordPress, I've never had any problems with it. They screen it out really well. I've had issues with forums, but almost every platform has this issue. So I recommend searching if you don't want to switch over to something else. Searching and seeing, has someone made some sort of code that you can install, some additional way to protect your site, prevent that. There's probably someone else out there with that same problem that's already tried to tackle it. I haven't gotten any, as for addressing negative comments, I haven't gotten any negative comments on my webcomic. I have on other projects that I did on PNR. And since that was so community-based, the way that I approached it was killed it with kindness. And you try to approach it as professionally and calmly as possible, because you're not the only one reading that. Your whole community. So if you respond to it well and kindly, then they'll feel more safe and protected and welcomed in your environment than if you respond to it really negatively. And then take action to remove it if it was a really public thing. Let people know what happened and why, just so it can't spawn anything. Anybody else got any thoughts on?
Don't feed the trolls.
Yeah, I also point out, I know some people just don't want any negative comments on in their comments at all. If someone writes and says, your comment sucks, they'll just delete it and not have it in there.
And you delete it. They're not going to be there anymore. Yeah. It's like they were just flaming.
That's a possibility. And I think for us, we've had a couple people who kind of weren't totally positive. We had one guy who kind of just came through and left two comments. Like, they were just kind of these little drive-by snark, you know, packages and left. And so I just ignored them. I left them there. I didn't delete them. So if someone had a real substantive complaint, I would engage them. And I wouldn't probably worry about, you know, banning them or deleting the comments unless they just were overly negative and had nothing, you know, worthwhile to contribute.
In some cases, in a situation like that, if you have a sufficiently large readership or a group of people that comment regularly, you'd be surprised at how some of those people will come to your defense. So you won't even have to say anything. You can just leave that comment up there, and somebody, one of your regular readers, will come along and say, "Hey, I think you're wrong, and this is why, and you shouldn't." And so. It's up to you if you want to deal with those kind of comments, or you can just wait and see if somebody else does. If nobody else does, then you can, you know, then you can come back and try and change their minds. But, you know, in a lot of cases, we've had our regular readers come and defend or, you know, present different viewpoints.
That becomes a
question, Mechner.
Just a comment, artist who writes the Gilbert comic strip got caught a couple months back. He was actually pretending to be another person reading his website and pretending himself.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
Gilbert readers should be slumping.
I think it's also worth mentioning that I've had people that they criticize as a form of affection, which sounds really weird, but I figured it out because I know one of them personally, and he critiques because he likes something. So he'll see something and be like, "Oh, this is cool. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong." And that's kind of his way of being like, I really like this, fix these things because I want to like it more. So
I want you to improve.
I want you to improve. So don't necessarily have the knee-jerk reaction of I'm being attacked. You got to take the artist, the sensitive artist, out of it and put in more of a customer service.
That's actually more professional artists to take critique and utilize it for your work. So you're actually being a professional by taking that on, and, you know.
Save your pain for your work.
This guy critiqued me. Okay, now I'm going to fix it.
So that's kind of, we've gone through a bit of community, a bit of comments. So merchandise, making money, is sort of the big, huge question mark. So what is the best type of merchandise or way to make money? I'm asking you because I don't have necessarily
the most popular one I've heard is t-shirts, but it's hard to get t-shirts because they're really expensive to make.
I think that's everyone's first knee-jerk reaction. They merchandise is t-shirts.
Yeah, I think I can sell t-shirts, honestly.
Yeah, they're too expensive.
I don't think t-shirts work so well for long-form products.
I don't think they work really at all.
I think that some guys like, what is that comic called? I can't think of the name of the comic account, but it's a gag strip that's about, they talk about video games and things like that. No, it's not that one.
Control-Alt-Delete?
Sorry?
Control-Alt-Delete?
No.
There's too many.
One of them.
There's only like two video game comics out there, so it's gotta be one of the other.
Clearly.
So I know they do t-shirts that really aren't about their characters or anything like that. It's just they're the gags, you know. The one that comes to mind is they took the monster from Cloverfield and combined it with Grover from Sesame Street and called it Groverfield. And so it's like this giant monster Grover, you know, attacking the city. And so that's the kind of thing they sell. So it's really not, you wouldn't look at that and go, oh, that's this comic. It's just a funny shirt. But because they have an audience that comes to read their comic based on their humor, then selling humorous shirts to that audience is fairly easy. Now, we have a cafe press store. And I mean, cafe press is a different issue. Some people tell you the cafe press is a bad idea to try to use. But still, the thing is, we've had this cafe press store with, here's an example of one of our shirts right here. Stuff based on our comic itself. And that has sold nothing. In 2 years, we've had, I think, one item sell. No one cares about that. So I think for long-form comics, anything based on your comic, your character and stuff, that stuff just isn't really going to sell much when it comes to t-shirts and whatnot.
But I want to touch on cafe press, but I'll wait until
that. Yes, sorry. What I meant was that what they want off the bat is t-shirts, but of course you can't provide it. So what you do is start small. So you could start out with bookmarks. You could print out little bookmarks from home, you know, little get clear bag things, you know, things that are affordable for you to produce. Or you can find third-party services like Cafe Press and Sixth Avenue, what's it called?
I use Spreadshirt.
Yeah.
There's a lot of services out there that provide
Zazzle, but they take a chunk of stuff.
Well, that's the big thing is with any print-on-demand service, they're going to take a big chunk of things. But the positive is that I've seen so many people get burned because they didn't try that at first, and a lot of fans went, oh, I want a t-shirt, I totally buy one. Then they made one, and suddenly, poof.
Yeah.
Hello, crickets, anyone? So there's a lot of times where just because someone says, oh, I want this, I'm going to buy it, doesn't mean that they're actually going to. So if there's an item that you're a little, you know, iffy on, you don't really think it can be sold long term, try out a store like that. It's a good testing run. If you sell in like bank, okay, you had the opportunity cost, but you could have made that t-shirt and gotten a ton of profit on it. But this way, you minimized the risk. So a lot of it is this, you know, it's like the stock market. How much are you willing to invest, and how much risk are you willing to accept? And how much total profit do you think you can make?
There's two magic words. Pre-order!
Yes. And
pre-orders. Take pre-orders.
And Kickstarter, too. What do you guys think of Kickstarter?
Well, I think it's an excellent idea. We haven't gotten to the point where we need it. We probably will in a few years, but I mean, definitely there have been some webcomic creators who've had extremely good success with Kickstarter.
Does anybody know what Kickstarter is before we get too far into the topic?
Kickstarter is it's a way you go on a Kickstarter and you create a campaign where you say I'm trying to raise this much money, and here's my project, and then usually you give people different levels where they can contribute to your project. Some people can contribute just so that they can promote you. I mean not promote you, but to support you. But then usually you have different levels where you say, okay, if you pledge me this much money, then I will give you, you know, one copy of my book when it's done.
Plus
and
a button,
you
plus a thing.
Higher levels where the more you support, the better the thing is if you're giving up.
Yeah. Kickstarter is all word of mouth, though.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, don't count on Kickstarter to support you, or just to promote you.
And it's blown up. It's really amazing in the past.
Yeah.
Not even years. It's like, came out of nowhere. They offered. Kickstarter started with movies and other artistic endeavors, and then they added comic books, I think, last year. It's just taken off in this community. And, like, everyone has a Kickstarter project now. So there's, like, a whole philosophy behind working it now.
Yeah.
Everyone has an opinion about it, and everyone says this is how to do it, and this is not how to do it. So it's kind of like, because everyone sees the potential, like, Stick Guy, what's his name?
Yeah, I can't
remember.
Or Stick made $1 million.
1.2
million.
Yeah.
What's his name?
1.2?
Yeah.
I can't think of his name either. The comic's called Order of the Stick. It's a
oh yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Stand up and model it for us, please.
Da 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 da. Yeah, you need the model of Ruther.
Rich Ferber.
Yeah. So yeah, he's had the comic for a long time, and he decided he wanted to do a Kickstarter to do some reprints of the books he'd already printed. He was asking for like $20,000 or something like that. Made $1.2 million. But he had his large following, you know, who was living. But basically, Kickstarter, though, is a way of collecting funds and is kind of doing pre-orders. What's nice about it, the reason that people, I think, like to contribute is that they don't have to be charged unless you reach your goal. So if you're asking for $5,000 and you get only $4,000, then you actually don't get any money and no one is charged. And so it's kind of a no-risk way for people to put some money into your project that's not complete yet.
There's also Indiegogo, which is similar, except you get to keep everything that you do make.
Yeah.
The downside is they take more fees for their services. But if you feel like I just want to get something to support what I have, and you don't have the confidence that you can make the Kickstarter portion, you can try Indiegogo too. When you brought up the Order of the Stick, it kind of reminded me of something that I found was really interesting. I listened to Tall Tale Radio podcast by Tom Racine, which really great for learning about a variety of things in the industry. And I think it was either him or Game Whisperer, which does a Kickstarter podcast specifically. They were talking to the guy that did Schlock Mercenary, and they ordered the stick brought up, and I thought it was really interesting, his perspective on it, which was, the $1 million is a great success and a great failure. And I went, whoa, failure, $1 million, how is that bad? He said, that's pent-up demand that could have been capitalized on for years, and never was until this moment. So, yes, that's a huge boom at this moment, but that could have been long-term growth if it had been managed properly and had been thought about for a longer term than just that kind of offhand moment, because it clearly surprised them and clearly people wanted it. So I think it's also worth kind of thinking about the long term. If you really want to be in this game for the long term, and you have to be if you want to be successful at it, to really kind of think about how can I start small, like Angie said, and sort of have different stages of growth so that you don't end up with a long building fan base that really wants something from you and cannot get anything from you. So listen to your fan base, interact with your fan base, and have that in mind.
Now, I had an idea for how to choose how to do your merchandise and how to design it. Is look up other comics professionally and online that are in your genre and how they handle their merchandising, and how they display the characters in that genre. And that's kind of a good place to start for what to make and what kind of images to use so that you... Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Research.
Yeah, do your research. And think of yourself as a consumer. What would you buy?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting, my mind immediately went to it, but it's a, you know, marketing 101. Nobody's going to buy something with your logo on it. You're like, oh, I'm going to make a t-shirt and put my logo on it, put my cover on it, put this on it. That's not interesting, generally, unless you have already an existing fan base and then people are clamoring, I want your logo on a t-shirt or I want your logo on this. That's got to be something that resonates. Go to Woot, go to some other things and look at, you know, what are engaging images? Go to these comics and saying, what are these things that, you know, what do I want to buy? And then, you know, copy it.
No,
not the actual image, but the idea.
So I'm wearing an example. This is from a webcomic. Some of you might know it, some of you might not. But it looks like a really cool shirt for general use, right? Anyone could wear it. And it's a Homestuck shirt. You know, he just makes all these shirts with these cool little graphic designs. Anyone could wear it on the street like a hipster and look good. And it's from a webcomic.
So you're saying if a hipster can wear it, that's what we should be.
Oh, yeah, we need hipsters.
That's what we need.
But we don't want them.
So we need 20-minute
Yeah, we need them, but we don't
want
them
in an ironic way.
Yeah.
So 20 years hits your collection. We're going to open it up to questions. We've already taken a couple from the audience, but this is kind of your time to get anything that you're really wondering out that we can answer or try to tackle. So, in the back.
If you have a niche long-form comic with a kind of a lush art style, should you consider selling original art as part of your revenue stream?
Oh, yeah.
I definitely think so.
You got to auction it, though.
Well, that's one way to do it. I mean, you could also do by page, too. That's what I'm planning to do in the future is sell the original pages.
Are you talking original art like your pages or original art based on characters, like custom art or something?
Are you talking about the
pages itself or like custom art?
I'm talking about the comic pages, so I do everything on Bristol board and then I scan and do my
type. So how long have you been running the comic and how big a fan base do you have?
I haven't launched yet. I would consider changing my workflow to do background characters separately, but that is
But you really can't sell the originals until you build up a fan base that's actually going to want them. Like, I only started doing that recently because I knew there was value to them now.
Right.
After, like, 5 years, you know. And now they want to buy them.
I would say we were kind of talking about that build, start small, build up. That's a build up product because you don't want to undercut the value of your work. Because a lot of people are like, do you think $10 is too much to charge for a 5-pack of sketches? What, $10 for 5-pack of sketches? No, charge more for that. Value your own work. And don't treat it like it's, you know, not all that good. And I think a lot of people, when they start out, they're like, well, I don't have a lot of readers, therefore my value is not very high. Your value is always high. It's just whether or not people are ready to perceive it.
That's a very interesting question, though, because, you know, do you sacrifice a potential future, something that could have value, to
get it
quicker
for less value now.
I know that Danielle Corsetto for Girls with Slingshots, she has all of her archives on there. You can buy the original strip that she did. I have several of them.
good job.
And but it's the same thing. When she changed to going to full color, but she went digital. And so I was totally excited. I was like, oh, I totally want that first one. And so I got it, and she still sells the original art, but it's just the line drawings. Mm-hmm. And I was a little disappointed. I was like, oh, I kind of wanted the color.
I had heard, I don't remember who it was now, but there was an artist who had a gag strip, and he switched to digital. He said when he did, he lost a third of his revenue stream because he had been selling his originals. So when he had no more originals, that was a lot of money he wasn't making. So certainly there's money to be made there, potentially. And certainly if you have a style where it's all done on the paper, that's probably going to be worth even more. In our case, Al does all his artwork. He uses the pencils on the paper, and he scans it and does everything else digitally. So our pencils probably aren't as appealing to somebody as it would be if it had been inked and everything else on the paper.
It's also worth considering prints. Doing limited edition, limited run prints, having them signed, and doing it that way. That you can't charge as much for them, but because obviously you can reproduce them. But that might be a way to kind of be in between, see if people are interested in it without having to give away your original artwork.
Yeah.
Because once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah, so my advice would be to hold on to them. Don't do that as part of your initial thing. Hold on to it for a while.
Yeah, and invest in doing some really nice, beautiful prints.
Wait until a bunch of people ask you for them.
Yeah, then, there you go.
You can always wait until you ask.
Or set their price point really high.
I don't know if I have the right words, but are any of you
no one is asked.
No,
right?
But I think it's worth thinking about.
I got an email to that effect recently for another project of mine. It's not webcomics related, for licensing and for potential TV pilots.
Really?
And I turned them down because they wouldn't provide any contracts or.
Ooh, good.
Yeah, if someone is not willing to make sign a contract with you.
I mean, they have a website and everything, and they look legit, but I asked for contracts and legalese and.
If you do get a contract, you take that to a lawyer.
Yeah.
So just having a website doesn't make you legitimate.
It's not making you legitimate in any way.
If someone wants to license, really wants to license, they're going to bring a contract with them. They're going to have it in their back pocket.
And then you read that and edit it.
Yeah, and they will let you,
You can take it with you, go to a lawyer, get it reviewed.
Make comments, make notes, make addendums.
You don't have to sign it right there.
Our background, we worked for a long time in Los Angeles in film, and so the first page of the filmmaker's handbook is they have lawyers, you need one. It's very common. So in terms of licensing, I still know some people out there, and there's been some people said, hey, we should make an animated thing or make a sitcom out of this. And our answer is, yep, just bring your checkbook. We'll do
bring
it.
Bring your contracts, bring your checkbook.
But there are some things that I would say definitely yes for, and there are other things that I'd have to really seriously think about it. I think my story would translate very well to television. I think it would be terrible as a film. Terrible as a film. And a lot of people go, well, any publicity is good publicity, but then I look at my favorite TV show of all time, which is Avatar: The Last Airbender, and I look at the film that shall not be named that was made of that, and I wonder,
and we will kill that director someday.
No. Did that really benefit that show's brand? I think it hurt it. So I would have to put some serious thought into who was doing it, how they were going about it, how much control I was allowed to keep, or how much control they would be willing to let me keep. I mean, J.K. Rowling still had veto power over how her films were made because she insisted on it in the contracts. As a result, we don't have little green men playing piano, as one director wanted in the third film, because she said, no, that doesn't fit in my world, and I don't want it in there. I don't care how visually awesome you think it would be.
I talked to a lot of creators last week in Albuquerque about licensing, because one of the friends I went with is in that mode right now, trying to option his product. And a lot of people are saying licensing, optioning, all that stuff. Sometimes they will option license your stuff to kill it, because they have another product coming out similar to it. An option license doesn't mean anything's going to happen with that. They can sit on it for years, depending on the contract you have, and you can't do anything with it based on that. So there's a lot of horror stories going around from prominent creators whose products are dead in the water because they sold the licensing rights or the option rights to it. So that's, if something like that comes up, be very cautious about the wording. And lawyers are good for some things every now and then, and that's one of them. So
it's kind of like with the originals. You can only sell them once. You can only sell your rights once. And when someone else has it, they have it. So treat your rights.
Yeah. Something you said earlier about valuing what you have. Value it. No, don't ever believe anybody say, oh, well, we'll give you points on the back end. Because if anybody ever says that, that's where you're going to take it.
Ever.
Family show. No, because that is, they say, oh, you'll get a percentage of the profits. There's never a profit.
No.
Unless it's something you truly believe in.
No.
If it's something you truly believe in and really want to do, then that's more of the merrier. But if anyone's for business proposition says back end, walk away. Walk away.
Yeah.
Any additional questions? Yes.
Are you guys selling anything? Like a lot of?
I have my first booth here. I've really kind of tried to stagger out because I've known quite a few people that their first year they were like, okay, I'm going to go across the country, all the coasts, hit the big ones.
No.
And they're not known well enough to really do anything. So I focused on doing locals first, and next year is local plus one. Next year is local plus maybe one outside of state, and try and grow it naturally. But I've been doing gangbusters here this weekend. I don't know if it's just the con's been great, but I've had a lot of fans that have met me through Twitter come by, buy books, tell other people about it, and made a lot of dry sales, because a lot of people are interested in supporting local creators. So I made back the table and then some the first day. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks.
We like t-shirts. We're doing pretty well with t-shirts.
But I have some other more successful friends, and they always say you kind of don't worry about, like, going to conventions is a gamble, but what you really want to do is just promote yourself and promote your company. So the more flyers and business cards you move out, that's technically a win when doing things. And then the rest is a happy bonus.
Well, but I still think there's...
Yeah, of course, if you invest in something, you want it back.
And you're just kind of bleeding out, and that will catch up with you eventually, too. So.
But, of course, those first couple cons are going to be rough, but as long as you're moving out your flyers, you'll be good. So
we have our first chapter book and some posters that we're selling. Going back real quick to the what merchandise is good. I think for long form comics, collections of your books are probably one of the main things you're going to sell.
I think a lot of it is matching who you have to what you are selling. Because, like you guys said, you're doing really well with t-shirts.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do well with t-shirts at all. But you and I have such vastly different.
What's interesting is the t-shirts that we're selling really have relatively nothing to do with our comic. It was a one gag strip out of the 150-200 that are on the site. It was a filler comic. It wasn't even one in continuity, but it was very popular, and it's just a little pithy saying, and so we put it on a t-shirt. And you know what's interesting is I think the popularity of it is because even if people aren't familiar with our comic, they like the t-shirt. They may never read our comic, but they buy that.
But you're still selling your brand of humor.
It's the brand of humor, and so you know, of course, we put the website on everything. So even if it's just a funny little statement, we put the website on there. So maybe we'll get some traffic from that. You know, it's the flyers and that building of readership, however, that's really been what we're shooting for the con.
Whereas my focus has all been on trying to get things that are like collector items that are a little more pricey, because I know that I have a readership that they don't want the normal book. They want the limited edition, hardcover, expensive, because they're not casual readers. So I think a lot of it is, are you niche or breadth? What are you aiming for? Because both can be successful. Are you guys niche or breadth?
Oh, no, we're casual. This is people can come back, can laugh about one comic, mm-hmm. And then we may never see them again, or, they could get very involved in the story. But most of it, I think it's the last time our readership looks like the stock market. It's like up and down, up and down. So there's really no way to gauge what's going to resonate with people.
Whereas my readership goes this, I'll get a link from somebody, it'll do that. It's all, it's very steady. Once they're there, they're there. When they're there, they really want the best quality, super investment. So I won't sell probably as much, but the level of investment that people are willing to put in might be higher.
Yeah, our friends like cheap crap.
That's not what I'm trying to say. I know it sounds that way. I just can't talk good. Come on, blame me. What I'm trying to say is that, Penny Arcade, or actually that's a terrible example, but PvP, for example, is very breadth, and he makes his a lot of it by the numbers, and the percentage of people that are going to buy is very, very small. And the more breadth you are, the smaller the percentage. So 1-2% might buy, but if you have millions of readers, that's still a lot of sales. In my case, and this is not yet based on actual numbers, but just based on the kind of response I've been seeing from people that are in my readership, I would estimate that percentage to be greater. It's still not going to be huge. It might be more like 5%, 10%. But I can have a comparably smaller readership and make the same amount that someone who's got a very small engagement makes in a larger one. So it's matching what you have with what you're selling with what your business model becomes.
You know, just a little bit about the merchandising side of it and putting the money into it. You may think you have a great idea, and then you said, oh, I'd buy that, and then they go away. So don't invest a lot into it. Ask your readers, or if you have this product idea, throw it out there. Say, I'm thinking about this. If you send me the money and I get a certain amount, you find out what your breaking point is. Start with your break-even point. And say, if I get 20, 30 pre-orders, then I'll make them. Ask people to put their money where their mouth is, because then you're going to see what really resonates.
Yeah. And it's kind of, you have to be honest about your own work, too.
That would kill us.
are you willing to put down five? Is your confidence worth $5,000? Are you confident enough that the product you will sell is worth $5,000? It's kind of a perspective question. I think my product is, and I was willing to put that down and drain all my savings for it, because I'm willing to take a risk on doing high quality books. But I also might be crazy, and I'm willing to accept the fact that I might have those when I'm 60 and have a nice bonfire when I'm 80. But I'm confident enough. I'm $5,000 confident. I'm also $5,000 poor. So are you $5,000 confident?
I've usually done little samples, and I usually go to cons pretty regularly, so I'll make a little sample set of some merch that I'm thinking about and see how they perform at the convention, and then I know I can put them, if they do well, I know I can put them up on the store for the comic, and then it seems to mirror the same results. So mm-hmm. I can make 10 for 3-day weekend of 10 buttons, 10 by whatever, and if they go, then I'm like, oh, I can make more and put them on the store, they'll do well. Seems like a pretty reliable way of doing things without emptying out your pocket.
Yeah, well, I'm just jumping off the cliff and being nice and cautious and smart. Listen to her. Don't listen to me.
I think it might have been in the... oh, I'm sorry. Was there a question? Anyway, I read something. I think it might have been in the How to Make Web Comics book, where they had this idea of the superfan. Someone who would spend...
Oh, is this that 1,000 person?
Yeah, if you can find 1,000 people who are willing to spend $100 on your merchandise over a year, then you have $100,000 in income. So, I mean, that's not easy. But the point is, you don't have to find people who are willing to put a lot of money into it. You can just find a few dozen people who are really into your comic, really willing, and therefore to buy some of your merchandise. Yeah, it's an achievable goal. You can make a living for yourself.
Not a big living, but you can make it.
You can at least feed the comics so that it's not eating you.
I think a lot of people go into this and they think, I'm going to be the next Penny Arcade. I've seen a lot of comics. Like, did anybody see Barry Beth Walls?
No.
Nicholas Brendan, I'm probably mentioning his name, but the guy that was Xander and Buffy.
Okay.
And an artist put that together, and you could tell that they were thinking, we're going to be big, we're going to be huge. Mm-hmm. And I emailed them to say, hey, cool comic, great. And their response was, so you're in this, awesome, how do you make money at it? And I said, well, it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of effort, try these things. 6 months later, they're like, oh, we're taking a break.
Yeah.
Never came back. You can tell. You have to have the love of it, too. You have to be willing to not ever... If you can say to yourself, if no one ever reads this and I can still be happy making it, go for it. Because you've already got the best benefit you can. Think about the business stuff. Keep it in mind. Try to merchandise. But be honest with yourself and what you want to get out of it. Because if you want to get money out of it, you are not playing good odds.
And your first customers are going to be your mom. And your dad and your aunts and the uncles. Those are going to be your first customers. That's okay. Don't be afraid of that. You know, again, it's valuing your work and treating it as a professional, because that's the experience you have. If you sell to your mom, if you sell to your aunt and your uncle, you're like, oh, it's going to make you feel better.
That is still a customer, and it still leads to more things.
Yeah.
And if you can sell them on that and they don't care about your work at all, then you can sell anybody on that.
Actually, if you can sell my mom, then you can sell anyone.
So I can practice on by selling.
Yeah. I'll bring her by just to please our egos.
Also on that same line, like, your oldest fans will also be your bestest fans. You know, they'll keep track of you all the way. I got a girl in the Philippines who keeps track of me all the time, and she's been there since the beginning.
So. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming. If you have any additional questions, we always are willing to talk to you.